John Shepherd is a sustainability consultant and technical director of Wren Sustainable Limited. He believes that government initiatives to help households become more sustainable are a joke, and he tells us why on this evening's programme. So who is John Shepherd?
I'm technical director of the company Wren Sustainable Limited, and we are sustainability consultants. We've been working for over 20 years in the island to try to get the government to engage with the concept of sustainability, and to date it's proved almost impossible.
And I mean, you say that, but government has whole teams now of people working on climate change, on zero carbon, on what they would describe as sustainable future for the Isle of Man. You sound somewhat pessimistic.
Well, yes, I mean, since we last talked in September, I mean, I've been really looking deeply at what's going on. And we work closely with Stuart Clayton, who the Nexium, which is the only installer of the tech for sustainability that we will work with. He asked me to go to a Construction Isle of Man meeting that was being held with the Climate Transformation Team in Douglas. And I mean, I was astonished at how little they seem to understand sustainability. I mean, I attempted to put the issues that we were developing with Hans Eek to them, and quite frankly, they weren't interested. I talked to some senior representatives of the local developers. They weren't interested. They're fully aware of passive and sustainability, but what it came down to, from what I observed, was that really all they're interested in is their own narrow, very narrow interest, which is, in terms of the developers, is optimising the number of properties they can get on a site, working with their existing system, but only to the minimum requirements of current building regs. I mean, in January, obviously, the government brought in legislation which meant that you could no longer use fossil fuel boilers in new build. The way the developers are dealing with that is effectively they're continuing to rely upon natural ventilation, and they're simply putting in heat pumps and solar panels, which effectively, because of the reliance on natural ventilation, have to be oversized, which means they're tying their their eventual clients into properties with too big, units that are too big, and they're going to cost them a lot of money to buy in the first place and then replace. Simply by making all the properties airtight, well below, to ideally to half an air change an hour at 50 pascals, instead of the current 3 air changes an hour, which is allowed under building regulations. You put a ventilation heat recovery system in there. If you orient the properties within 30 degrees of south, the main face with the main number of windows in, then effectively you need virtually no additional energy to go in to keep the place warm. In fact, in summer, you have the problem of overheating, but you can deal with that by, as we do, by using a combination of ventilation with heat recovery and natural ventilation, because we placed our property near a tree, which means we got cool air under the tree, which we can funnel through the property to cool it.
One thing that may surprise listeners, certainly surprised me there, is what you're saying is you get down to half a room change per hour as opposed to 3. I think many people would be quite surprised to learn that even if their property meets the current standard, the air in the room changes every 3 times an hour, every 20 minutes.
Oh yes, and I mean, of course, what's going out with that is pound notes.
With the heat, of course.
Yeah, and of course, but this is not just common to the Isle of Man. It's right across the British Isles. I mean, the British government, or the UK government, is not engaging with it. I mean, they produced a couple of years ago a thing called the Code Report, which was looking at how they achieved the use of non-fossil fuels in properties to achieve all the goals of carbon neutral, whatever. And they totally ignored ventilation with heat recovery. They just advised that you basically reduced your number of air changes as far as possible, ideally getting down to about half an air change an hour. But you're still, you know, losing a vast amount of energy.
What? Well, I mean, government will say, were they here anyway, they would say that we've got the Green Living Grant and there's a team of people associated with that to advise homeowners on what they can do to reduce energy waste. Is that not a positive step?
It's a total joke. They're apparently rewriting it next year, but currently it is a joke.
And that's quite a strong thing to say.
Well, I've got personal experience of it.
Yeah.
When I last saw you, we had three potential clients who were doing deep retrofits to, you know, as low energy as possible. And one of them in Peel wanted to put a heat pump in to replace the existing failing gas boiler. Quite reasonable. What I hadn't realised, I'd assumed that the government, when they adopted the permitted development option of putting in heat pumps from the UK, that they would keep it as it was. But when I first met with Stuart, he says, oh no, what the government did, he said, when they brought it over here, for whatever reason, they changed the parameters. So whereas you can put it on any rear wall or, you know, sidewall under permitted development at any height, the height that is optimal to make the system work effectively, in the Isle of Man, you cannot put them above 1 metre from the ground. Now, what immediately that has done is remove possibly 70% of the properties in the Isle of Man, particularly around, you know, the big Douglas, Castletown, where you've got tiny little yards at the back, and you're so limited, you can't put them within that 1 metre.
And why is that?
Well, because they've effectively said if you want it higher, you have to apply for planning permission. But Stuart was telling me that so far, he's not been able to get planning permission to put it above 1 metre in the ground.
And why is it important?
If you think about what happens, is it takes the air, the surrounding air. Now, if you're in a tiny little backyard, for a start, you know, on the ground floor, you've got people going by, you've got, you know, limited space, you've got windows, doors. You can't, you know, it's almost impossible on the ground floor to do that and get the optimum return from it. Hmm. You know, there's several places I know where they've just popped them on the ground, but they're not working as effectively as they should. I mean, Stuart is very meticulous about this. If he knows a system is not going to work properly, he won't put it in.
So a metre from the ground in a standalone property with very few properties around about and plenty of airflow is a reasonable thing, depending on the aspect of the property, I presume. But in those cramped circumstances, the airflow isn't as great as
it needs to be. Well, it just isn't going
to
work. It's a combination of... You know, if you look at in Peel particularly, it's very difficult because as it was a sort of main fishing area, effectively most of the cottages there were occupied by fishermen and there was combined access, all sorts of issues there. So you've got this thing of people passing through from adjacent properties because of the way that everything was set up. And it means that, you know, particularly in the case of the property in Peel, where the client was expecting £5,000 to £6,000 return, when we discovered that he couldn't actually put it on the house without planning permission, which he wasn't going to get effectively, we moved over to putting solar panels on the property, which he could do under permitted development. However, when he then approached the DEFA to say, right, effectively under the green scheme, you've approved my application, we can't put the heat pump in because effectively it doesn't work here and, you know, it's not practical, et cetera, because of the way the regulations are established. So we're going to do this, this and this. And they said, oh, no, we can't give you we can only give you £3,000 towards that. And he said, look, I'm spending £12,000-£13,000. They told me they were going to give me £5,000 or £6,000 towards it. Now they're saying they're only give me £3,000. And he said, I'm sorry, you know, he said, I'm a pensioner. I've got limited time, I've got limited income. I'm just going to basically put a new boiler in and have done with it.
For people who perhaps are younger and have more of their life ahead of them, it makes sense, doesn't it, to move away from fossil fuels as your main sort of heating source, because over a period of time, you generate savings that you wouldn't get from the fossil fuel boiler. But do you think perhaps, I don't know, somebody, maybe, well, you're doing this already, obviously, but maybe more needs to be done to actually encourage people to realise how much they could potentially save by moving away from fossil fuels?
Well, yes, certainly from what I've seen of the advice that the current Green Scheme gives to people, it misses some very key points. But as an example of young people, I mean, we've got a couple of friends who have been saving for years to buy a property. They're sort of middle income, and in the interim, they're living with their parents. You know, not ideal. They finally got everything together to buy effectively what is a first-time buyer's house, not particularly expensive in the Isle of Man market, but they've had to scrape to get through there. They currently are afraid to turn on the heating, the gas heating, because they don't know how much it's going to cost, and they don't know whether they're going to be able to afford it. And that, you know, it's an insane situation. I mean, it's a two-bedroom house.
And, of course, in those circumstances, they could, no doubt, generate savings by moving to air source heat pumps or whatever.
I mean,
but if they've already stretched themselves in terms of what they can borrow, they can't borrow a bit more to save money.
Exactly, that's it. Mm. I mean, from what I gathered at the Construction Isle of Man meeting, you know, this, the new green scheme that's coming out is supposed to be all singing and all dancing, but I'll believe it when I see it.
And we mentioned earlier about, discussing young people. One of your initiatives has been to write to the Tynwald Youth Select Committee, and they are, of course, investigating the situation with housing on the Isle of Man. We've heard them on the programme now for a couple of weeks. Are you hopeful that perhaps younger heads with less political baggage may be more receptive to what you're saying?
Well, I very much am hoping, because, I mean, at the moment, you know, many of the most educated of our young people, the ones with the greatest potential that they could put into the Isle of Man, are simply leaving the island. They go off. The island pays for them to be educated. They then realise that what opportunity have we got on the island? Very limited. We can't afford to buy properties unless we've got parents with sufficient money to help us. We can, you know, north of England, we can pick up properties for £50,000 or £100,000. We can get, there's much more job opportunities, etc., etc., and they leave. The problem, the corollary of that is then they come back when they either retire or close retirement. So instead of us actually, the island actually having benefited from their years of experience and their education, effectively they come to us when they're in need of support from the health services. Now, what I put towards to the Select Committee was the fact that in 1978, I co-founded and was chairman of a experimental cooperative housing and building association called Sonesta. We worked with Professor Laurie Taylor, the sociologist, and the concept was that we were looking to see how the relationship between management and labour could be improved, because at the time it was pretty dire. You know, there was intransigence on both sides, and there seemed to be no way out of it. It went on for 6 years, and we closed it in 1984 because we considered that the experiment was over. But by the end of that, the 20 odd people who were involved, most of whom were extreme left wing, socialist worker parties and other similar groups, actually did finally understand the management position. I mean, we used to have meetings regularly every week, and they always used to say, brothers, da-da-da-da, and all the stuff. And I used to say, hang on, boys, you are not just labour, you're also management, so you have to wear both hats. You've got to look at both sides of the equation. And certainly, many of them went on to use the experience they gained there to great effect, and things have improved in the relationship as a direct result between management and labour. Part of what we did with that was we looked at how the cooperative format could be used to provide another layer of housing where properties were always affordable. Now, obviously, in the open market, you know, you don't know what's one day it's worth £500,000, next day it's worth tuppence. Cooperative company structure is not as nowhere near as well defined as normal limited company structure. So you can pretty much write into it what you want. And what I suggested to the Select Committee was that the government currently wants to establish a housing association in the Isle of Man. I don't know why, because housing associations are burgeoned in the UK for the simple reason that the Thatcherite legislation, which was totally politically motivated to give people the right to buy their social housing units, has effectively destroyed the local authorities in the UK. How the social housing was the core of their financial survival. Government effectively took it away from them and failed to replace that income. So currently we have a situation where most of the local authorities in the UK are either bankrupt or close to bankruptcy, with possibly exception of Westminster, interestingly. Now, the way this would work, I mean, the government's proposing to use the 1,100-odd houses that they have under their direct control. Now, if one established a cooperative housing and building company with that those properties, all the existing tenants could be offered the opportunity to either become members, which would require a small payment, because people don't value anything if they don't pay for it, or they could remain as tenants. As members, you would have the right to buy the property you lived in or another property that was within the housing association. The proviso, of course, being that you could only sell it back to the housing association or another approved member of the housing association at the then determined price, which would be considerably below market price. This would allow people to accrue capital, which if they then decided to move into the open market, they would have a good start. The hope would be that one could effectively create a community within a community, within, you know, with people, that they would start to become more effective in the way that they work with each other, that they work within the community, just full empowerment of people, you know, moving towards hopefully an ideal society. It would revolutionise the way that housing is managed on the Isle of Man, and it would give the Isle of Man a potential to accrue business from across the world to show how we'd done this, why we'd done it, and just how successful it was.
First of all, did the Youth Select Committee reply as yet, or are they still considering?
Yes, they came back and they said that they were going to include it in the final report, and that effectively, I mean, I offered, if they wished to question or come and see the housing that we built and talk further about the ideas, I'd happily come along and meet with them and so on.
Great, yeah.
So it was very positive in that sense, you know. A, the fact that they asked me to write the submission in the first place, and secondly, that they've responded very positively to it.
Sadly, we only have a few minutes left. I suppose the first question, I suspect I know the answer, are you optimistic that government will introduce the changes necessary to improve the housing situation? And the second question is, what would you say to David Ashford, who's now picked up the mantle as chair of the Housing and Communities Board? Mm. What are the things that he needs to do? And sadly, we've only a few minutes left.
Right. Well, I'd say very simply, you know, we have to. I mean, I want the government to fund Harnsville. It's only going to cost about £10,000. Effectively, Ralph Peake has agreed that he will help us to organise the situation.
And he's the passive house.
They built. Well, let's just to give you a quick example. Basically, the Williston development still ongoing, years in. Half the houses still with no roofs. Proposed to be completed by 2025. Harnes, the two five-story apartments with 30, a total of 60 apartments within it. Effectively, each of those units, because of using modular construction, was wind and watertight in 4 weeks.
Gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
they were completed totally, ready for occupation in 11 months. And, you know, the cost per unit was £2.7 million.
And with that sort of technology and business sense, within a year or two, we wouldn't have a housing crisis, I'm guessing.
We wouldn't have a housing crisis, and we wouldn't have, you know, look at the Summerhill View care home, originally budgeted at 11.2 million. It's now proposed to be 14.9 million. If we had to use these systems in that, it would have been half of that cost. It would have been completed within a year or more, or potentially less. Same with the Williston development.
So effectively, if David Ashford is listening, and hopefully he is, I might even email him and suggest that he should. What you're saying is, get this man over and learn from him.
Yes, learn from him. I mean, he's one of the world. He's now recognised as a world expert on sustainability. And I mean, he's an incredible, incredible man, musician, and I mean. You know, I just...
And hopes for the future? Do you think that by the time we get to the next general election, 2026, that we'll still be hearing that the housing crisis is the problem that needs to be solved, or will it be sorted by then?
Well, I live in hope. I mean, I try to be positive about things, but it's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult in the current circumstances. I mean, interestingly, we're in the middle of the wettest April on record, and we're not even halfway through it. And how much more rain are we going to get? I mean, the big concern amongst sustainability consultants is effectively, if this continues, are we going to be able to continue farming? What is it going to impact? Where does it stop? We really have to start doing something now. And unfortunately, it's down to government. Government has to legislate to make this happen. We can't just rely on, developers or others to do what needs to be done, because they've shown consistently that they will only comply with the minimum requirements of legislation rather than take it that extra mile. There are exceptions. I mean, Gary Cluett being one. But they unfortunately are the exceptions rather than the rule.
And final point then, do you think that perhaps part of the problem here is that there doesn't appear to be any specific legislation requiring government to help people get their homes better insulated?
Well, yes. I mean, we're proposing to spend 40-odd million on a wind farm over God knows how many years. If they put £40 million into a scheme to improve people's houses, put photovoltaics on, we wouldn't need wind farms. I mean, in Sweden, basically, they don't build massive infrastructure. What they do is they have a flexible system which allows local generation from private individuals to meet the shortfall in peak periods. I mean, the properties that Hans built, each property over the first year exported over 44,000 kilowatt hours of electric into the grid, making them effectively the most energy efficient buildings in the world, domestic buildings in the world. You know, it's all there. If all we have to do is embrace it.
That was sustainability consultant John Shepherd. So what do you think? Is John just touting for business, or is he right that government attempts to help us lead more sustainable lives are a joke? Government has legislation requiring it to deliver on carbon reduction targets, but legislation requiring government agencies to help people reduce their energy needs is sorely lacking. Would legislation requiring a government department to help make our homes more energy efficient actually work? It certainly makes financial sense for us all to better insulate our homes and reduce energy bills, so why aren't more of us doing this? For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn. Gorn Amayu. Thanks for listening.